Desmond agreed, peering over Rook's shoulder. There were 6 grists laid out along the storage compartment deck, a combination of Rook's sneak attack on their rear, plus the stormtroopers' earlier fire between the shields. The ends of the Nogri's fighting sticks had a bit of a glow to them. Probably they were the halves of his usual electrostaff weapon. But even without that boost, Kemond had no doubt Thrawn's bodyguard would have handled his opponents just fine. So, 6 here. Add in the 3 or 4 he and the other stormtroopers had taken out in the first exchange. I figure there are 7 or 8 left up front, he said. Maybe as many as 11 if they brought the freighter prisoners with them.
I didn't count numbers,
Rook said.
But I saw some in the cockpit, standing over the control boards.
Trying to figure out how to fly it, Kemond said grimly.
Oh, no, they don't,
Teffen growled.
They are not taking my ship.
No, they're not, Kemond said, coming to a quick decision. Until the Grisks up front realized their force back here had been taken out, the Imperials had the element of surprise. Played right, that was worth 1/2 a squad of fully armored stormtroopers any day. We hit them hard. Right now, full bore all out.
While they're waiting for their friends to come back and report our deaths,
Teffen said.
Okay, let's do it.
What do you want me to do?
Rook asked. Kemond frowned at him. So now you're taking orders from me?
I always took your orders.
Rook waved a stick around to encompass the Darkhawk.
First Legion ship, First Legion orders. Otherwise, I would have come out for the freighter attack, whether you said no or not.
That would have been nice to know sooner,
Teffen muttered. Well, we know it now, Kemond said. You have your personal cloaking device with you?
No,
Rook said.
But I won't need it.
Probably not, Kemond said. Okay, we'll go in hot, keeping our fire high. You go in low, wherever you get an opening, and make as much of a mess as you can. Rook gave an evil grin, spinning one of his fighting sticks deftly across his fingers.
I can make a great deal of mess,
he promised. We'll make it together, Kemond said. And remember, we want to come out of this with the ship still flyable. Lord Vader might want us to use it again someday. From the time the 17 Grisks escaped from their makeshift cell to the time they boarded the Darkhawk was approximately 4 minutes. From then until Commander Kemond and his forces recaptured the ship was approximately 8 minutes. Returning the surviving prisoners, 4 of them, took another 10 minutes. All told, the entire incident covered less than 1/2 an hour. And there was every indication, Pharaoh thought bleakly, that the death and destruction had only just begun. Grand Admiral Thrawn normally dominated every room he was in. Not this time. He normally carried an air of calmness that extended out to all those around him. Not this time. He always seemed to be in complete control of everything. Not this time. Standing here, in the cramped space of the Darkhawk's cockpit, facing Lord Vader from barely 30 centimeters away, he seemed small and helpless. A man who was facing death itself. And yet, there he stood. Commander Kemond cannot be blamed for his actions, Thrawn said, gazing calmly up at the faceless black helmet. On the contrary, his actions and those of his stormtroopers were exemplary.
Which does not change the fact that they ruined the entire plan.
I warned you that keeping the secrets of the prisoners' marginal imprisonment and the homing beacons could have unwanted consequences.
It was necessary for the Chimera's crew to behave as normal.
Astonishing as it was to Pharaoh that Thrawn was chiding the Dark Lord, it was even more astonishing that Vader was actually standing still for it.
The prisoners needed to believe their escape was genuine.
I don't disagree. I merely suggest that a middle ground might have been taken. Commander Keymond, at least, should have been brought into our confidence, as well as any troopers or stormtroopers who stood between the prisoners' cells and their frigate.
Vader didn't respond. But then, really, there wasn't much he could say. Pharaoh had been at the private meeting where Vader had proposed this plan. Thrawn had agreed, and in fact had added a few small suggestions. Neither of them could have known that Keymond and his stormtroopers would unknowingly get in the way. They certainly couldn't have known that Hangar Master Zoxton would choose to send 3 off-duty crew members across that precise section right when the Grisks made their break. Zoxton was furious. For once, Pharaoh didn't blame her. 4 dead, and with nothing to show for it. The Chimera's techs had made a thorough search of the Dark Hawk's computer. It showed only the route from the Grisks' hunting ground back to Batuu, where they'd apparently been based, without referencing any other systems. Thrawn's analysis of everything artistic aboard their ship had yielded some interesting points, but gained them nothing about the Grisks' local base.
Still, even a partial success can bring long-reaching results, Thrawn said into the awkward silence. As it is, we have now learned a great deal about our new enemies.
Such is the fact they have no teeth,
Vader said with an edge of bitterness.
That as well, Thrawn agreed. Removing a warrior's teeth and replacing them with upper and lower moldings that contain break-apart weapons, communicators, and lockbreakers is quite ingenious. The ultrasonic signals they send to their colleagues through the metal bulkheads is also a technology that could be of future use to the Empire.
None of which has brought us closer to our goal.
Actually, my lord, I believe it has.
Thrawn turned to Pharaoh.
Commodore, you have the record of the communications between the 2 groups of prisoners. How much information do you estimate could have been passed during that time?
Pharaoh started. She'd been hoping against hope that Thrawn had brought her into the cockpit solely to serve as a witness to the conversation. As she'd watched Vader's menace continue to darken, she'd further hoped her presence would be mostly forgotten. Instead, Thrawn had just dropped a conversational grenade in her lap. How in the world was she supposed to answer such a question?
They were in communication, back and forth, a total of 2 minutes and 8 seconds, she said. We can't tell right now which signal originated from which group of prisoners. Also, without knowing the encryption method they were using, or even their language, for that matter, it's impossible to know how much they could have said.
Understood, Thrawn said. So let us assume clear language, with whatever coding they use for the speech, but without any encryption to burden or lengthen the message. Under those parameters, what information could you transfer in that time?
Pharaoh felt her throat tighten. Normally, she didn't mind Thrawn's mind games. They helped her stretch her thinking, and anything that made her a better officer was worth seeking out. But to do it here? And now? Especially with Vader on the verge of wrecking the whole place?
The whole place?
She looked around the cockpit with new eyes. Having this conversation aboard the Dark Hawk had been Thrawn's idea, not Vader's. And Thrawn never did anything without a reason. She turned back to Thrawn. The Admiral had a small smile on his face, the indication that he was once again comfortably ahead of her.
I could tell the Grisk warriors about this ship, she said. A brief description, plus where it was located in the hangar bay.
And instructions on how to fly it?
Thrawn prompted.
No, sir.
Pharaoh said firmly.
Not in 2 minutes. Not a chance.
Thank you, Commodore, Thrawn said, inclining his head to her and then turning back to Vader. Your personal shuttle was closer to their prison. Their own frigate was farther, but with the advantage that they knew how to fly it. Yet they chose the Darkhawk. He gestured to the control board. More than that, we see that they had already activated the engines and begun the pre-flight sequence when they were stopped. He paused, apparently waiting for Vader to speak. But the Dark Lord stood silently, gazing at the board. The Darkhawk is equipped with modern weapons and equipment, Thrawn said. The prisoners from the Grisk freighter had seen it in combat and knew it would be a prize worth capturing. But at the same time, it is at heart a relic of the Clone War. And there is only one place in this region where they could have studied this type of freighter and learned how to operate it. Vader rumbled something under his breath.
Mokivja.
Indeed, my lord, Thrawn said. More specifically, the Separatist factory on Mokivja that we once assaulted.
Vader straightened to his full height.
That you once assaulted. No one else aboard the Chimera was ever there.
Of course, Thrawn said, inclining his head. I misspoke.
For a long moment, they gazed at each other in silence.
Pharaoh found herself holding her breath, feeling a fresh edge of tension crackling through the room. There was something going on here, something deep beneath the surface. Only she had no idea what it was.
You are the commander. If you believe this factory is the key, that is where we shall begin.
Thank you, my lord.
Thrawn again turned to Pharaoh.
Commodore, prepare a course for Mokivja. We leave in 2 hours.
Yes, sir,
Pharaoh said.
That will give you time, my lord,
Thrawn added, looking at Vader.
To speak with the remaining prisoners, if you so choose.
Indeed, Admiral.
Vader rumbled in a voice that sent a fresh chill up Pharaoh's back.
You have uncovered some of their secrets. I will uncover the rest.
Chapter 14.
Padme wasted another 20 minutes searching through every inch of the factory's west wing. All 3 floors, in search of something useful that the previous occupants might have left behind. But the entire place had been cleaned, down to the bone. The low barriers that marked out the space in Lebjow's old work area, however, were held in place by metal uprights. Sturdy metal rods, hollow, with square cross-sections 5 centimeters across. On one of the uprights, the fasteners were loose enough that she was able to carefully work them the rest of the way out with her fingernails. Once she had one bar free, she was able to use its end to unscrew others. Even with that to help her, many of the fasteners were still too tight to work free. But in the end, she was able to gather 23 of the rods. It cost all 23 of them, broken or bent, to lever the trap door lid far enough for her to squeeze back through it. She didn't know exactly where the corresponding trap door into the south wing was located, but if the access points had been laid out symmetrically, she should be able to find it. After that, the next task would be getting it open. Hopefully, Lebjow's comment about how heavy the lids were without power meant that the south wing's lids did have power, and that the controls were someplace where Padme could get to them. If not, she was going to have to get creative. From the confident manner in which Lebjow had walked through the service level, she gathered the droids didn't come down here very often, if at all. But it wasn't an assumption she was willing to bet her life on. She used her glow rod sparingly,
as she worked her way across the permacrete floor, keeping it on its lowest setting and only flicking it on for a half second or so every dozen steps, just to make sure she wasn't heading straight toward a pillar or a pile of debris. Better to err on the side of caution. It was just as well she did. She was halfway back to the spot where she and Lebjow had entered when she spotted a faint glow in the distance. She froze, pressing against the pillar beside her, straining her eyes and ears. The glow was still there, moving slightly with the rhythm of someone walking. She couldn't hear anything, but the light was far enough away that even soft voices would probably be inaudible. Soft voices, or the muffled clank of droid feet on permacrete. So, either Lebjow or his friends heading back to the south wing, or a battle droid patrol that would ultimately return to the east wing. Either way, it was a direction she needed to go. Taking a deep breath, she headed off toward it, using her own light even more sparingly. She had nearly caught up when the light suddenly stopped and swiveled upward. Padme slowed her pace, and a few seconds later, she felt the familiar puff of air that marked a trap door lid opening. And now, finally, she was close enough to hear a pair of muffled human voices as the figures climbed the ladder. The lid closed, and darkness and silence returned. Padme hurried forward, using her light openly now. Ahead, she could see the cone and the ladder with the lid above. She rounded the last pillar and nearly dropped her light as a pair of arms snaked around her shoulders and yanked her back against a hard, muscled torso. The arms twisted up and to her right, trying to throw her to the ground, while a knee jabbed hard into the back of her right knee, further threatening her balance.
"Whoever you are,"
a voice muttered in her ear, and broke off as Padme snatched her blaster from her hip holster, twisted it around and over her left shoulder, and pressed the muzzle against his throat.
"You should let go now," she murmured back.
His whole body twitched, his arms loosening but not completely letting go.
"Padme?"
"Yes, Huga,"
she confirmed, recognizing his voice now.
"I mean it. Let go."
This time, finally, his arms fell away. Padme stepped forward and turned around, leveling both her blaster and her glow rod at him.
"How was the fishing tonight?"
she asked. His eyes had gone wide, his mouth hanging open.
"How did you get in here?"
he demanded. Above her, the trap door lid swung open.
"Did you get him?"
Simi's voice came from above.
"Sort of,"
Padme called back.
"Padme?"
Simi gasped.
"But you're outside."
"Not anymore,"
Huga growled.
"Lebjow did this, didn't he? He let you in. Frost, that idiot. He's going to wreck everything."
He jabbed a finger in the direction of their secret exit.
"Get out, now!"
"Not yet," Padme said. "I need your help."
"I don't care,"
Huga bit out.
"You need to get out before the metalheads catch you."
Padme felt her stomach tighten. So the droids did come down here.
"Not yet,"
she repeated. She had a sudden inspiration.
"Uncle Anakin's here,"
she said.
"But he's in the droid section."
"He's here?"
Simi cut her off.
"Already? That's great!"
"Has he got our money?"
Huga added.
"Of course,"
Padme said. Anakin was bound to have at least a little money with him.
"I just need a couple of things to get in there and get him out."
"Yeah, but you can't do that,"
Simi said, his enthusiasm fading.
"Get in, I mean."
"He's right,"
Huga said, eyeing her blaster.
"Unless you're planning on shooting your way in."
"I think we can come up with something a little more promising,"
Padme assured him.
Where's Lepchow? We can use his help on this.
He's up in the barracks,
Huga said, his voice going suddenly casual.
But we could do this without him.
In other words, a two-way split of the reward was better than a three-way split.
Fine, she said. I'll need to borrow some clothes from one of the women. These aren't exactly local,
she added, waving toward her outfit.
Then I'll need to get hold of one of those wristbands.
We don't have any spares, Simi said. And once they're off, they don't go back on.
Really? Padme said. How do you know?
There was a moment of awkward silence.
One of the workers died a few weeks ago, Simi said at last. We thought we could bring someone else in and give them his job, but we couldn't get the ends to match up right.
You couldn't just glue it?
We tried, Huga said grimly. The first metalhead who checked it could tell it was stolen. Or maybe that it was on the wrong person. I don't know which. Beppy tried to run, and it shot him.
Padme felt her throat tighten.
I'm sorry.
We've still got it, Simi offered. They gave us back the body to bury, and we took the wristband, but it's useless.
You think we can take this conversation upstairs?
Huga asked, glancing nervously around.
We're not supposed to be down here.
Certainly, Padme said. You can start by finding me some new clothes. After that, I want to see this useless wristband.
Anakin had told Thrawn they would wait 2 hours before breaking out of their cells. In fact, though, practically from the moment Solha and his entourage left, he'd been working out how exactly he was going to do that. Now, with the 2 hours gone, he was no closer to finding a way than he'd been at the start. The door was solid. The dowel pins were wedged in, and just outside his view through the door. Without being able to see them, he couldn't get a solid enough grip through the force to pry them loose. The cell walls seemed old, and for a while he'd hoped he could start at one of the ventilation slits and tear away bits and pieces until he had a hole big enough to squeeze through. But the material had been glazed around the openings, and again, he couldn't get enough of a grip on the edges. The cot was too flimsy to use as a pry bar, and too light to make an effective missile.
Interesting structures.
Thrawn's voice came from the next cell, echoing oddly off the hard surfaces.
I wonder what they used to store in here.
Hadn't really thought about it,
Anakin said shortly, stretching out a hand toward the door for focus. If he used the force to pull, and then immediately to push... no good. A trick like that required a certain amount of slack in the fit, with a chance to build up momentum in one direction before abruptly sending the door in the other. But the fit here was well-nigh perfect, with no more than a millimeter's worth of give. Not nearly enough.
The 2 hours are over.
Yes, I know,
Anakin growled back, looking around the cell yet again. Still nothing.
Have you found an exit?
No,
Anakin admitted between clenched teeth.
But don't worry. We'll figure out something.
Perhaps this will help.
Frowning, Anakin looked over toward the other cell and watched in amazement as a thick, 2-meter-long cord slithered through the air vent and landed in a heap on the floor.
Where'd you get this?
He asked as he stepped over and picked it up. It was made of thin strips of cloth, braided together with a slip knot at one end.
I made it from the fibers of my clothing,
Thrawn said.
Nice,
Anakin said. He'd heard the muffled sound of tearing early on in their imprisonment, but the outfits they'd taken from the Larker were a little tight, and he'd assumed Thrawn was just making himself more comfortable.
Since the dowel pins are sabered, I thought you could perhaps loop it over the tops and remove them.
Worth a shot? Hang on.
Anakin took the cord to the door and carefully fed it through the vent opening. It was long enough for him to hold on to one end as he lowered the other to the left-hand dowel. It didn't need to be that long, of course. Either Thrawn had forgotten he could manipulate a shorter cord with the Force, or else the Chiss was just being thorough. He worked the slipknot over the dowel, pulled the cord gently to tighten the loop, and gave a careful pull. Nothing. He pulled a little harder, easing a bit more muscle into the task, painfully aware that a makeshift cord like this could only take so much strain before it broke. But the dowel pin was too tightly wedged.
"Perhaps if you try to oscillate the door, you can loosen it,"
Thrawn suggested. Anakin smiled. "No, not oscillate. Lubricate."
"You have another strip of cloth handy?" he asked. "Doesn't have to be big."
"Will this do?"
A ragged square of cloth, maybe 5 centimeters on a side, popped through the vent and fluttered toward the floor.
"Perfect," Anakin said, catching it in midair with the Force and sending it through the vent in his door.
Holding out a hand to focus his mind, he eased it to the floor outside his prison. Into the first drop of oil R2-D2 had left behind. He let the cloth soak up the whole drop, then moved it to the next, and the next, as far down the corridor as he could see. Then, bringing the now wet rag back, he eased it against the dowel pin below the slipknot. He wiggled the door once, then again pulled gently on the cord. And with that final tug, the pin came free.
"Got it," he told Thrawn, as the pin swung on the cord into his view.
He pulled the slipknot off the pin and shifted the cord and the oilcloth to the dowel on the other side of the door. 30 seconds later, he was free.
"Excellent," Thrawn said.
"Couldn't have done it without you,"
Anakin said, carefully pushing the door open and looking down the passageway. The fact that no one had interrupted him during his door work suggested that Solhaw hadn't left any droids on guard duty inside the room. He was right. The passageway was empty. The single door at the end closed. Still, he doubted their captor had been careless enough to leave them completely unguarded. That meant droids outside the door, and he had no way of knowing what types or how many of them there were.
Time to remedy that. "Get ready," he told Thrawn, setting his palms against the door. "It's about to get a little noisy in here."
The first woman they found who was the right size was already fast asleep. Hooga didn't bother to wake her, but simply helped himself to her spare robe, sash, and boots, and handed them to Padme. Their next stop was more dark-edged, the unused corner where the former possessions of workers who had died were stored.
"Do people often die here?"
she asked as she dressed. The worker's robe was rough and smelled of sweat, but of course, so did she.
"One time each,"
Hooga said shortly, as Simi sifted through the mass of cast-offs.
"Come on, come on!"
"It was worse at the beginning,"
Simi said as Padme knotted the sash around her waist.
"Their leader, Duke Solhaw, pushed everyone
"Duke Solhaw?"
Padme interrupted, feeling her eyes go wide.
"Solhaw is here?"
"You know him?"
Hooga asked, his voice suddenly heavy with suspicion.
"I met him once,"
Padme said, thinking back to one of those pre-war diplomatic excursions that had sometimes seemed to be the bulk of her job as a senator.
"A long time ago."
"Long enough that he won't recognize you,"
Hooga pressed.
"Because if he's going to know you, we're bailing right now."
"I'll be fine," Padme assured him. "Let's just get in there, okay?"
Hey, I'm not the one holding things up,
Hooga growled.
See me, you've got 10 seconds to find that thing, or I swear I...
It's here,
See me growled back.
Give me a second. Anyway, Duke Solha pushed everyone too hard. Mostly lifting and carrying, and sometimes just too much weight.
I'm sorry, Padme murmured.
It's better now,
Hooga said.
Ah, finally.
This is it,
Simi said, getting back to his feet and offering Padme the discarded wristband.
But like Hooga said earlier, we couldn't glue it.
I'm not surprised,
Padme said, peering at the wristband in the light of her glow rod. It was simple, thin plastoid, bright yellow, with a couple of barely visible wires running through the edges.
There's an induction loop embedded in the material. If the ends aren't lined up right, or if there's glue or something blocking the circuit, it won't give the right echo when it's sparked.
Could we overlap and use tape or something?
Simi asked.
Ordinary tape won't stick to this well enough,
Padme said.
And you'd have to make sure the circuit ends were solidly together.
So what are you going to do?
Hooga asked.
Padme pursed her lips. It was risky, but at the moment it was all she could come up with.
There are some metalheads patrolling this wing, right?
A few, Hooga said. Mostly at the edges, to keep us from wandering off.
Do they patrol singly, or in pairs?
Singly, most of them, Hooga said.
The ones guarding the doors into the east wing are in pairs,
Simi added.
She didn't ask about the door guards, dummy,
Hooga admonished him.
No, I need to know about those, too,
Padme said.
You said you were in a work crew. Does it have a name or a numerical designation?
Hanu, Mary. What?
Simi asked.
She made a number for all of us, Hooga said. Yeah, we're maintenance crew herf too. So what are you going to do?
Kill two birds with one rock, Padme said.
Wrapping the band loosely around her left wrist, she slipped her S5 blaster into one of the robe's side pockets and tucked the more compact ELG-3A into the sash at the small of her back, where it would be mostly out of sight, but easily accessible.
Let's go find one of the singles.
Anakin pushed the door about a meter, then released it and jumped back into his cell, letting the door crash shut. The thud was quieter than he'd expected it to be, but it should be loud enough. If it wasn't, he'd just have to try again.
If you expect the guards to come in, bear in mind there's little I can do while I'm still locked in,
Thrawn warned.
That's okay, Anakin said. All you need to do is sit back and enjoy the show.
Padme's plan had assumed that, with a Jedi supposedly running loose, Duke Solha would have patrols all over the factory. But he didn't. As she and her two companions headed toward the east wing, they saw no one. For all appearances, Solha might have barricaded himself into his stronghold in the hope that the Jedi would eventually give up and go away. Still, that didn't mean he'd left the approaches to that stronghold unguarded. They rounded one final corner to find two B-1 battle droids flanking a solid-looking door, their E-5 blasters leveled.
Halt!
One of them called as the three humans appeared.
Where are you going?
What do we do?
Simi whispered from beside Padme.
You said we needed just one metalhead.
Don't worry. We'll make it work,
she whispered back. Squaring her shoulders, she started toward the droids.
Maintenance crew herf too, she called. Got an order to come clean something on the first floor.
The droids looked at each other.
We were not alerted,
the first droid said.
Who gave you this order?
One of the others,
Padme said, continuing to walk forward.
I don't know which one. You all look alike.
Where is your wristband?
The second droid said.
Right here,
Padme said. She stopped in front of him and pushed back the sleeve of her robe, revealing the band balanced across her wrist.
It is not correct,
the droid said. It lifted its blaster to point at her chest.
You will come with me for examination.
What about them?
Padme asked, beckoning toward Huga and Simi with her right hand.
We have a job to do, remember?
They will wait here,
the first droid ordered, waving its blaster back and forth between them for emphasis.
I will call for a supervisor.
Okay, but we were told to rush it,
Padme said. She started walking again, watching both droids out of the corners of her eyes. The first continued to hold his E5 on the two men as it popped the lock on the door. The second swiveled toward Padme as she passed, its blaster tracking her movement, clearly intending to let her go by and then fall in behind her. She stepped directly between the droids. Abruptly, she stopped. For an instant, the second droid's blaster tracked past her, out of alignment with her body. And sweeping the blaster from her left forearm to keep it pointed away, she snatched the ELG from her sash, jammed the barrel up under the droid's long chin to the intersection of head and neck, and fired! The droid went limp. Its processor vaporized. Padme didn't wait to see it fall, but spun around to face the other droid. It was trying to bring its own blaster to bear, but the weapon was too far out of line. Before it could swing the blaster even halfway around, she delivered her second kill shot. In the silence, the double clatter as the B-1s collapsed to the floor seemed to boom. The noise half-covered Huga's startled curse.
Are they dead?
Simi asked, sounding awed.
I didn't know you could do that.
You need a blaster with enough punch,
Padme told him, crouching down beside the second droid. Her shot had burned straight through the top of its head, leaving a smoking, red-edged hole.
Come here, and give me a hand.
What do you need?
Simi asked, gingerly dropping to one knee beside her.
Hold the other end,
she said, taking one end of her wristband and pointing a finger at the other end.
Get a grip a couple of centimeters back. Now hold it steady.
Carefully, Padme touched her end to his, making sure the thin wires of the induction loop were lined up. Then, holding the ends together, she laid the plastoid against the glowing edge of the blaster hole.
I'll be crinked,
Huga muttered as he watched over her shoulder.
Is that going to work?
We're about to find out, Padme said, sniffing the air. There was the faint smell of scorched plastoid. Let's ease it back. Go ahead and let go, Simi.
He did so, and Padme lifted her wrist for a closer look.
Seems okay. We'll find out inside if I got it right.
Whoa! Huga said. What do you mean, we'll find out? Simi and I aren't going in there.
I thought you were going to help me get Anakin out,
Padme said as she stood up.
We were helping you get in,
Huga said.
We're not going in there without orders.
He nudged one of the droids with his toe.
Not after this.
Padme looked at Simi.
Simi?
Sorry, he said. I'm with Huga on this one.
I understand, Padme said, feeling a twinge of guilt. These were just normal people, trying to live their lives and survive under the Separatist thumb. Now, because of her, they were having to put their lives and the lives of their friends at serious risk.
Where exactly are these bins?
The shells?
Simi pointed at the door.
Inside, turn left, and the outer entrance door is in a plain permacrete wall, about 50 meters in and on your right.
Thanks, Padme said. One other favor? Would you find Leb Jow and tell him where I've gone?
Huga snorted.
Why? Because he still believes there's a reward?
What do you mean? Padme asked. I promised.
That was when you needed to let your uncle know where to find you,
Huga said.
But he's here now, before he ever got your messages. So I guess he found you all right on his own. So tell me he could see the future and knew to bring money with him. Go ahead, tell me.
Padme sighed. Putting their lives on the line and now convinced there would be nothing to show for it.
Just tell Leb Jow, she said. And don't worry, I will get you your money.
The door the B-1s had been guarding had relocked itself sometime during the past couple of minutes. But as Leb Jow had suggested, her newly restored wristband clicked off the lock as she approached, allowing her to push it open and slip through. Tucking the ELG back behind her sash and pulling out the more powerful S5, she opened the door and slipped inside. There was a distant thud, a subtle puff of air through the ventilation slits on Anakin's door, and the soft clatter of rushing droid feet. The guards had arrived.
Hurry!
Anakin said, loudly enough for the droids to hear, softly enough for them to think he was talking to Thrawn or someone else.
They're coming!
He braced himself. And then, there they were. Two B-1s, their E-5s raised, rushing forward to see what had made the noise they'd heard from outside. They reached the cell doors and stopped, their heads turning back and forth in confusion. And as they stood there, Anakin stretched out to the Force and shoved the first droid backward across the narrow passageway, slamming it hard into the permacrete wall behind it. The second droid managed to get its blaster up and aimed before Anakin smashed it into another tangled heap beside the first.
Impressive, Thrawn said.
Thanks,
Anakin said, pushing open the door and stepping into the passageway. One of the E-5s had been damaged when the droid holding it had hit the wall. Picking up the other one, he leveled it at the distant cell block door. If the commotion had been heard, they could be getting company any moment. But the passageway was empty, the door at the far end having apparently closed by itself behind the droids. That wouldn't last, he knew, but at least they should have a little breathing space.
Looks clear, he said, keeping an eye on the door as he stepped to Thrawn's cell and pulled out the dowel pins.
Thank you, Thrawn said. The stories we tell of Jedi don't do you full justice.
We'll try to send you back with some fresh material,
Anakin said as the Chiss pushed open the door and slipped out of his cell.
Okay, first job is to get my lightsaber back. After that, we'll take a look around and figure out what Solha and his friends are doing.
Have you planned to retrieve your weapon?
Thrawn asked as they headed toward the door.
Not really, Anakin said. It'll probably depend on how easy it is to get up on the roof. I set it right next to one of the floodlights, so it shouldn't have been noticed by any of the Vulture droids.
We'll hope there are no rooftop foot patrols.
I didn't see anyone up there on our way in.
There was no Jedi on the loose then.
Point,
Anakin conceded.
We'll figure it out.
He pulled open the door. The first thing he saw was the blaster leveled at him from barely a meter away.
The second thing he saw, above the blaster...
Annie!
Padme said, her eyes going wide, her lips parting in a relieved smile. Are you all right?
I'm fine, Anakin assured her, turning his blaster away from her.
Focused on the problem of his lightsaber, he'd completely missed her approach.
Are you all right?
I'm fine, she said. She started forward, her arms opening for a hug.
This is Thrawn, Anakin said, twitching a hand in warning. He's here to help me find you. Oh, and he speaks Mees Kauf.
Ah,
Padme said, her arms dropping quickly as she peered past Anakin's shoulder.
Thank you,
she added in Mies Kalf.
My pleasure,
Thrawn said gravely.
You, obviously, are Ambassador Padme. Is that a grappling hook on your weapon?
Padme looked down at her blaster, a flicker of surprise crossing her face. But then she was new to Thrawn's observational skills.
Yes, she said. It's a combination blaster and ascension gun.
Then the plan is obvious, Thrawn said. You and I will travel to the rooftop to retrieve General Skywalker's lightsaber. He'll remain here and draw enemy attention away from us.
Wait a minute, Anakin said, frowning. You and Padme? Wouldn't it make more sense for me to go up and get it?
We cannot create nearly as wide-ranging a diversion as you can,
Thrawn pointed out. Abruptly, somewhere in the distance, an alarm began to sound.
Well, that's going to wake them up,
Anakin said. He really didn't like the idea of letting Padme go off alone with the Chiss. But he was right. With the Force allowing Anakin to throw objects and even fire blasters from a distance, he could make the Separatists think they were facing a whole army. Even Padme and Thrawn together couldn't do that. And it wasn't like Padme couldn't take care of herself.
Fine,
he growled.
If Padme's okay with it.
No problem,
Padme said, eyeing Thrawn thoughtfully.
I've been told there's a massive assembly line taking up the first and second floor, just down the hall. Stairway's right behind me.
I'll check it out,
Anakin said, taking her arm and turning her back out of the doorway.
We'll go up together, and then you can head to the roof.
We'll do better to go out the hole in the south wing service level,
Padme said.
There are a couple of trap doors leading down from that wing that the locals use to sneak in and out. I don't think the droids know about the hole. And we can go up the outside of the building and get to your lightsaber. It's on top of the east wing, right?
Yes, next to one of the floodlights,
Anakin said.
It was all he could do to keep from taking her in his arms.
But Thrawn was here, and the Chiss already was suspicious of their relationship. Though why Anakin should even care about that, he didn't know. It wasn't like Thrawn would ever go to Coruscant and tell anyone.
We'll bring it to you, Padme promised. Second floor of the assembly line?
Anakin nodded. Trust Padme to quickly grasp all the details and their tactical significance. The second floor of a two-floor operation would give him the best overall view, and launching an attack at the assembly line itself was his best guarantee of keeping Duke Solhaw from looking anywhere else in his little kingdom.
I'll be doing a one-man Marg Sable.
Sounds good,
Padme said.
Be careful.
Her hand twitched, as if she too was fighting the urge for a quick hug. Then she turned and hurried away. Anakin caught Thrawn's arm as he started to follow.
Protect her,
he said quietly, handing him the droid's E5.
I will,
the Chiss promised. And then they were gone. Over the still warbling alarm, Anakin could hear the sounds of voices and hurrying footsteps. Taking a deep breath, forcing himself to hand Padme's life and safety to the Force, he prepared for combat. Chapter 15. Padme and Thrawn had passed the two downed droids and were halfway to the trapdoor she was aiming for when Lebjow suddenly appeared around a corner in front of them.
Look out!
The big man called, leaping toward her.
It's all right,
Padme said quickly, holding her left hand palm outward toward him and lifting her blaster muzzle up in front of Thrawn. The last thing she wanted was a battle between two allies, especially with her in the middle.
He's a friend.
Doesn't look like a friend to me,
Lebjow rumbled.
Or an uncle.
He's a friend of Uncle Anakin's, Padme said. Listen, I've got a job for you. This place is about to get very unhealthy. I need you to wake up everyone and get them out of here.
What?
Leb Jow asked.
What are you talking about?
His eyes narrowed.
What are you planning?
I'm sorry, but I'm afraid we need to take this factory down,
Padme said.
I need you to get everyone to the river.
No!
Leb Jow bit out, bunching his hands into fists.
This is our factory! Our jobs! Our world! You can't just come in here and... Frost it, Padme! This isn't fair! It isn't right!
Let me explain your choices, Thrawn put in. Your factory is going to be destroyed. That is not negotiable.
Who do you think you...
Your only options, Thrawn continued, are to watch that destruction from a distance, or to watch it from the inside. A shiver ran up Padme's back. Thrawn's voice had been measured, without emotion or emphasis. But there was a strength behind it, and an absolute conviction that she'd seldom heard, even in the most passionate Senate speeches. Leb Jow heard that conviction, too. He swallowed, looked furtively at Padme, then gave a reluctant nod.
All right,
he said, his voice shaking a little.
I guess... How long do I have?
We'll give you all we can, Thrawn said. But understand that we're not fully in command of that timing.
Just go, Padme added. Please.
Leb Jow's lips compressed briefly. Then he nodded again and hurried away.
Where's this trap door you spoke of? Thrawn asked.
His tone, Padme noticed with another shiver, hadn't changed.
This way,
she said, continuing on.
Are you really planning to destroy the whole factory?
That's a decision for you and General Skywalker, Thrawn said. This is your war. These are your enemies. But the workers need to be prepared for the worst.
I suppose,
Padme said. Put in that light, it didn't sound nearly as heartless. But the voice and the tone still nagged at her.
Here,
she said, stopping beside the trapdoor.
Is this where you came up?
Thrawn asked, crouching down for a closer look at the lid.
No, I came up through the one at the other end of this wing,
Padme said.
But this one's closer, if we can get it open.
Let's find out.
Laying down a Z5, he got a grip on the lid and pulled upward. To Padme's relief, it opened without trouble or even a noticeable squeak.
This one's been used recently, he said, retrieving the blaster and peering down the opening. Have you a light?
Right here,
Padme said, pulling out her glow rod and offering it to him. He made no move to take it.
You know the route, he pointed out. You lead.
Fine,
Padme said, making a face as she got a grip on the ladder and started down. Again, not unreasonable. But having an armed unknown at her back didn't exactly help with her already high sense of vulnerability. Still, Anakin vouched for him. That counted for a lot. Once again, the service level seemed deserted. With Thrawn behind her, Padme led the way toward Leb Jow's secret exit, feeling a little strange about the lack of opposition. Earlier, she'd speculated that Duke Solhaw might have barricaded himself in with his main assembly line. If that was true, she may have just sent Anakin into the dead center of a droid army, alone, and without even his lightsaber.
What's a Marg Sable?
Padme blinked away her sudden fears.
What?
General Skywalker said he'd be a one-man Marg Sable,
Thrawn reminded her.
What did he mean?
Oh,
Padme said, trying to remember the details. It had been a long time since Anakin had told her about Ahsoka's inspired maneuver.
It's a battle tactic invented by his former Padawan apprentice.
A warship turns its hangar bay away from its attacker and launches its fighters unseen. They stay in the ship's visual shadow while they form up and accelerate to attack speed. Then they come around their ship from all sides, attacking the enemy from every direction at once.
Interesting, Thrawn murmured. I can see how that could be useful against certain species. Those in particular who have difficulty focusing in more than one direction.
It worked pretty well against the droid fighters Ahsoka was up against at the time, too, Padme said. Anakin told me that a Marg sable is a type of Togrutan flower that opens its petals in a sunburst shape every morning.
I see, Thrawn said. So the one-man Marg sable he referred to will involve appearing to strike from all directions?
Probably,
Padme said, feeling a fresh twinge of worry. A one-man anything sounded risky at this point.
Did you happen to notice what the rooftop was like when you flew in? I'm wondering if there's a parapet that'll take a grappling hook.
No, there isn't, Thrawn said. The surface is slightly concave, toward a drainage line in the center. There's a small ridge at the edge, but not large enough to properly engage a hook. We'll need an alternative plan.
Don't worry, Padme said. I've got one.
Anakin had hoped that Duke Solha would keep him, Thrawn, and R2-D2 together for the hurried interrogation that he assumed would follow the courtyard lightsaber show. But splitting R2-D2 away from the others had always been a possibility, which was why Anakin had set up the oil drip in the first place. He followed the trail out the door and down a wide corridor heading north along the East Wing's western side. Right up to where it disappeared, beyond a locked and armored door set in a solid permacrete wall. Anakin scowled as he studied the door. All the other ones he and Thrawn had been rushed through since leaving the courtyard had been simple latch and hinge swinging doors, probably the factory's original equipment, with no special security added in. Apparently, Solha didn't care whether the locals Padme mentioned could get into and out of those areas. The main assembly chamber, though, was a different matter. For a moment, Anakin considered going back to the stairway Padme had pointed out and seeing if the security there might be easier to bypass. But unless Solha was incredibly stupid, that door would be just as well protected. Still, they probably needed to bring workers in there on occasion. And of course the guard droids needed to get in and out as well. In a remote location like this, working among primitives who might never even have heard of the Separatists, security might reasonably be traded for convenience. Battle droids, Anakin had long since learned, were heavier than most people realized. Occasionally that had proven useful, such as when he or his clone troopers needed to hold a prisoner for later pickup and didn't have any binders with them. A couple of downed B-1s settled across the captive's arms and legs usually did the trick. None of that weight mattered to Jedi, of course. Using the Force, Anakin floated one of the droids he'd crumpled in the cell block up the stairs to the second floor. Mentally crossing his fingers, he maneuvered the droid's torso up to the door. It was still a meter away when he heard the faint snick of a disengaging lock. He smiled tightly as he pushed open the door and floated the droid through. Convenience over security. And he wasn't going to make Solha's mistake himself. Closing the door behind him, he balanced the droid against it on his side. Its transponder should be close enough to keep the door unlocked for when Padme and Thrawn returned. But opening the door and pushing the droid aside should make enough noise to alert him. The door opened onto a short foyer that ended in a section of scaffolding. Staying low, his hand automatically reaching for the lightsaber that wasn't there, he moved to the edge of the scaffolding and looked down. He and the 501st had attacked plenty of droid assembly facilities over the years, and most of them followed one of only a few standard patterns. Not this one. The line was creating a version of B-2 super battle droids. That much was clear from the molds and the size of the conveyors, not to mention the 8 finished B-2s standing rigidly against the far wall. But unlike other droid factories, the armored sections weren't coming out of red-hot injection forges. They were instead laid out along a pair of separate belts, with only low-temperature plastoid molds in sight. Between the belts were bins of metals, plastoid pellets, and something that looked vaguely fibrous. Possibly the material he and Thrawn had seen in the courtyard, though he still had no idea what it could be. The assembly process was also far outside the norm, with what looked like an adhesive or catalytic process for putting the pieces together, instead of the usual welding torches. A set of support pillars ran down the center of the room, maybe 10 meters apart, and he wondered briefly if there might be unpleasant surprises lurking behind any of them. The only occupants were 3 men and 2 women working feverishly at a large control table near the center of the room. A B-2 droid stood motionlessly beside them, a thick cable leading from the console to the programming access port under the droid's left arm. 3 more B-2s stood guard nearby, though whether they were protecting the techs or preventing them from leaving wasn't clear. R2-D2 was on the opposite side of the table, and for a moment, Anakin wondered if the techs were doing something with him, too. But a closer look showed that the little astromech wasn't connected to the rest of the system by any cables. Apparently, the techs were trying to upload the proper programming into the B-2's brain, and R2-D2 had simply been parked there out of everyone's way. Anakin frowned. Programming was normally part of the whole droid assembly process, with the new droids coming off the assembly line fully functional and ready to fight. This batch had apparently been created as blanks, with programming to be added later. That was probably a decision Solha was regretting. Every B-1 Anakin had seen in the courtyard, minus the ones he'd shredded, seemed to be here, along with 7 hulking B-2s besides the 3 at the control table. Solha was hunkering down, and the fact that he had his techs activating his new blanks was evidence that he wasn't feeling particularly safe. On the other hand, if the Duke was running scared, why wasn't he in here, where droids could protect him? For that matter, the more Anakin studied the B-2s, the more it looked like the ones that weren't at the table had been deployed mostly to defend the bins of fibrous material beside the armor plate molds. Thrawn had pointed out the mining truck in the courtyard with a suggestion that it and its cargo were important. But at the time, Anakin had been too preoccupied with choreographing his disappearing Jedi trick to pay much attention. Far across the room, the armored door at the far end swung open. Anakin felt his jaw drop. Marching into the factory as if he owned the place, a blaster gripped in his hand and a pair of B-2s trailing behind him, was a clone trooper. Anakin's first wild thought was that he was imagining things. His second was that it was a crazy coincidence that somehow this far-flung world had managed to come up with armor that mimicked that of Republic troopers. Neither was correct. The person striding along down there was indeed wearing genuine clone trooper armor. Not only that, but it looked from the markings like he was from the 212th, Obi-Wan Kenobi's unit. So that made him, what, a loyal clone who'd somehow gotten innocently mixed up in this? A non-loyal clone who was deliberately working for Solha and the Separatists? Or was he a decoy, here to create the precise confusion and uncertainty that Anakin was currently feeling? The trooper stepped over to the programming table. He dropped his blaster back into its holster and pulled off his helmet.
It wasn't a clone of any alignment. It was instead Duke Solhaw. Anakin puffed out a silent breath. At least that cleared up the question of why Solhaw hadn't been here. Apparently he'd been off scrounging up some extra protection. Where he might have come up with the clone armor was an entirely different set of questions. But Anakin didn't have time right now to wonder why the Duke had such resources at hand. Even as Solhaw set his helmet down on the edge of the desk, the door opened again, and two more clone-armored figures came in. This pair was leading a group of B-1s that were lugging bins of more fibrous material, with another pair of B-2s running rear guard behind them. The two troopers popped their helmets as the door closed behind them, revealing the other man and woman who'd been in the courtyard. The B-1s, for their part, headed to the armor conveyor and the other bins, the B-2s following to reinforce the droid guard already there. Solhaw left the table and crossed to the other Serenians, meeting them halfway, and then the three of them paused for a quiet but clearly intense conversation. Anakin pursed his lips. The whole thing was starting to look way more complicated than he'd expected. Still, sorting it out could wait until he had Padme safely back at his side. And the best way to ensure her safety was to keep Solhaw and his droids busy right here. Reaching out to the Force, he focused on one of the B-1s near the door. A little nudge to its blaster's aim, a small twitching of the trigger. The blast echoed off the high ceiling as the bolt slammed into one of the B-2s standing stoic guard beside the bins. It was a glancing blow, and the B-2 barely even twitched from the impact. But even as the B-1 yelped in confusion, the super battle droid's programmed reflexes kicked in, spinning it around and raising its right arm, its dual wrist blasters tracking toward the source of the attack. Luckily for the B-1, Solhaw was faster.
"Hold!" he shouted, cutting short his conversation and yanking out his own blaster.
Anakin briefly considered snatching it away from him, then decided it would be better to keep the true situation muddled as long as he could. Unfortunately, Solhaw was quick on that one, too.
"It's the Jedi!" he shouted, swinging around in a slow circle, his eyes darting back and forth. "He's in here somewhere, making you shoot at each other! Spread out and find him!"
And here, Anakin knew, was where it got fun. First on the list was to create a little confusion. Stretching out to the switches by the far door, he turned off the lights. Four of Mokivja's 10 moons were high in the night sky as Padme led the way through the hidden exit. They were small moons, smaller than any of Naboo's 3. But even through the attenuation of the energy shield, their reflected light was enough for her to get a clear view of the South Wing's outer wall as it towered above them.
"What's your plan?" Thrawn asked, coming up beside her.
"The windows on the West Wing were covered with a protective metal mesh," she told him, slinging her backpack over one shoulder and pulling out her monocular.
"So are these,"
she confirmed, peering through the device.
"The mesh is open enough for the grapple to catch, and should be strong enough to hold our combined weight. We fire the grapple, engage it, then the motor in the grip pulls us up."
"How many grapples do you have?"
3, but we won't need more than one," Padme said, putting the monocular away. "The telescopic sight cylinder rotates 90 degrees and locks, and is reinforced to work as a second handhold. You hang on to that one, I hang on to the main grip, and we go up together."
"Once we've reached the top of the line, how do you propose to gain the rooftop?"
Padme peered up at the wall again. That was a good question, actually. The top of the upper window was a solid meter below the level of the roof, and she couldn't see any place where they could brace their feet.
"I guess one of us will have to stand on the other's shoulders in order to reach the top."
"A difficult maneuver," Thrawn warned. "I doubt you can take my weight,
and my own chest and shoulder muscles have been somewhat compromised.
By?
Enemy weapons fire, Thrawn said. I suggest instead that you set a grapple at each of the two adjacent windows. If your ascension gun is sturdy enough, the cables would form a V-shape that one of us could use as a foothold while stretching to the roof. Padme measured the distances with her eyes.
Yes, that should work,
she agreed. Her backpack was still hanging by one strap. She started to shift it back into proper position on her back.
I'll take this,
Thrawn said, deftly pulling it off her shoulder.
That stays with me,
Padme said, trying to snatch it back. But he kept it moving out of her reach as he slipped it on.
Thrawn!
I need these, he interrupted, sliding the E5 blaster Anakin had given him through the straps.
He winced a little, she noticed, as the weapon slid across his chest.
Your weapons are smaller, and can be secured without using your hands. Mine cannot.
She glowered at him. But again his argument made sense.
Fine,
she said.
But I get it back once we're up top.
Agreed.
He gestured toward the wall.
At your convenience, Ambassador.
Padme had never tried using two separate lines and grapples from the Ascension gun at the same time, but she remembered the manual saying it could be done, and the operation came off without a hitch. The next part, climbing that last meter up to the roof, was a bit trickier. But Thrawn had apparently done something like this before. With Padme hanging from the gun, he used the lines to climb to their intersection point, balanced on the S5's muzzle, then continued holding on to one line while he walked his hand up the wall to a grip on the narrow rim at the top. Once he was up, he set the E5 and backpack aside and lay down at the roof's edge, pulling up on one of the lines until the gun was within reach. After that, it was a matter of gripping Padme's wrist, giving her a steady pull upward until she could get her other hand on top, then retrieving the S5 and the grapples. A moment later, with Thrawn in the lead, with his E5, and Padme following with her backpack and the S5 once again in blaster mode, they headed off across the moonlit roof. Padme had assumed this would be the most dangerous part of the trip, even if Duke Solhaw hadn't sent any of his B-1s up here. The Vulture droids were surely keeping a close watch on the factory. But she and Thrawn reached the eastern edge of the south wing and continued on to the east wing roof without so much as seeing a Vulture, let alone being challenged by one. Thrawn seemed to think it odd.